Thanks for downloading this episode of the Simcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by searching for the Simcast wherever they get their podcasts. The Simcast on RS1.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Simcast, your weekly source for occasional sim racing news. This is episode 36 of our 2023 season. It is US week once again, so I am here, Mr. Ben Williams. Unfortunately, Mr. Satterley and Mr. Burrs both could not join me this evening, so sitting in on tonight's show is our new friend Justin Price. How are you this evening, Justin?
Well, I'm doing good once more. Justin Prince once more.
Prince, excuse me. I am sorry.
It's all good. It's all good. It happens a lot. But it's good to be good.
Yes. I will be completely transparent. Tonight's show is kind of held together with a shoestring and a prayer. Not only did I have my own issues at work this week, but as did Mr. Satterley and Mr. Burrs. So thank you, Justin, for jumping in literally at the last minute to help out in the show this week.
Yep, it's no problem at all once more, especially to talk about sim racing.
Yes. So, Justin, how are you been involved in the sim racing world? I know you do a show with Taylor, the iRacing Download, I believe it is, correct?
Yes, that's correct. That's through the Speed Sport Podcast Network, where we discuss some of the similar topics, but more so towards iRacing-centric side of things, and talk with some of the world championship drivers, in particular with the NASCAR side, but also in regards to the other side of sim racing stuff, also been a commentator on the iRacing service with multiple different broadcasters since about 2017, have also done world championship announcing at the levels up there, including the NASCAR Coco iRacing series, a couple years as a pit reporter, and a couple years as one of the announcers for the World of Outlaws championships. So been on the service, give or take, in terms of the broadcasting scene for about 7-8 years, I believe, now.
So did you start getting into involved in sim racing because you were actively in the hobby, or was it coming from like a broadcast side?
It's kind of a combination of both, because when I first started broadcasting, it was while I was still in college at St. Croix College, which was the local college in Windsor, Ontario. And one of the main things that, if for people who may not know the geography, Windsor, Ontario's nearest racetrack, if you want a short track outside of a dirt circuit, is 2 hours either direction, whether you go across the U.S. or over to Canada. So while I was doing some basketball broadcasts at the time and starting to branch onto other sports, I also wanted and still had a dream that hadn't been realized of wanting to pursue motorsports commentary, because I had been and still am a lifelong NASCAR fan who watched plenty of the broadcasts growing up. So one time by around 2017, it was the summer of that year, was thinking and wondering, how do I actually get into this? Because I had just been following along with some of the broadcasts across the platform. And this was about a week or two after the crazy finish that year at Watkins Glen in eNASCAR competition. It was one of the first exposures to Evan Pizzocco, for reference. In terms of how that came to be, in terms of how I got into it, I randomly just posted on the forums one day, how do you get into announcing with the company or announcing races? And the first response was from Dougie Beard, who is one of the top camera builders right now in all of iRacing. At the time, he was exclusively building cameras for companies like GSRC. So, like, reach out to them and say, I sent you there. And that opened the door with them within the next few months to be able to get chances. That being said, it wasn't easy, to say the very least, because obviously, if you don't have a racetrack nearby, you don't have that same experience as to, say, just on the sim and so forth. it took a few months, if not a few years, to really get comfortable, especially with what I call today. Not just the oval side, but the road side, the dirt side, the everything all the above side, because of that exposure you get from the virtual side to all those disciplines. So to really explain how I got in, it was just the simpleness of wanting to get into announcing, posting on the forums, and connections are born.
Yep. Yeah. Pretty similar to how I started getting involved in this podcast, was that I was working with Matt and Lewis at Tora, and they needed the person to fill in for doing some hosting for a week, and I put my hand up, and I've been here doing this for 5 years now, which is kind of hard to believe. And just watching how much sim racing has changed and grown over the years, because I remember watching like Ray Alfalo win his fourth championship back when it was still the iRacing NASCAR series. It wasn't eNASCAR. It didn't have the Coca-Cola sponsorship. I remember watching... I'm blanking on the driver's name right now. But I've been watching that series for a while and been like really enjoying watching it grow in sim racing as a whole over the last couple years.
And honestly, I would argue that it really grew in a lot of cases, and while it's stabilized somewhat, it's still at a higher peak than it was prior to 2020, because that was when a lot of people turned their attention to it because everything was shut down, right? So that's, of course, that was a huge opportunity for many people, and that still is where some of the momentum is being brought in, with especially on the road side, I'd argue, more than I do on the oval side. Well, there is a lot of momentum building this year, especially with the NASCAR, with some of the stuff. But that's where I think it really got towards, is this a mainstream esports category in that time? That being said, too, that's when it became the same thing in the broadcast realm. Because a lot of people who are some of the up-and-comers, even with your company today, like Peter McKay is a good reference point, some of the opportunities came through of some of those who are working at those tracks through that time in 2020 and through those respective broadcasts. Like some of the up-and-comers in NASCAR, Blake McCanless, who's one of the top counts here for the Coke series, he's been getting chances with the Cars Tour, in part with those connections through eNASCAR and through the sim racing side. Others that come to mind, for example, Joe Peek got opportunities starting this year, DJ Clark the year before that on the state side. The opportunities are growing because so many people move to the sim side. And while there had always been the talk of people can potentially move up from this, it was, okay, how do you do that? And you'd get a shrugged look in your face outside of just commentate a track. Now it's, you can do that, but also you add on the virtual side to gain that extra exposure. And you combine those two together and you can move up those ranks compared to, say, if you didn't have that exposure, you might not have those same connections built up.
Yeah, and just being able to make connections is such a huge thing. Like, the way I got to know Taylor was that I interviewed him, and I am blanking on his cohort's name at the time, back when Taylor was still doing a lot of stuff with, I am having a horrible memory this evening. Podium. That's it.
Yes. That group. Yes.
Yeah. That's when I originally met Taylor, and that's when, Taylor was like, hey, if you ever need another host to come in, let me know. And one thing led to another, and he's been joining us here in the last 9 months, and I really enjoyed having him on board. Yeah, so... yeah, again, thank you for jumping in. It's glad to... I have I have tried Komodo Sword commentary. I don't talk fast enough to do it.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. I usually say he's going into kettle bottoms when he's clearly not in kettle bottoms as well. It's just, oh, I've just said the wrong quarter name because I'm focusing too much on what's going on and that's coming out of my mouth. But anyway, shall we jump into tonight's particular batch of sim racing news?
Why don't we indeed?
Yes. So first up is Rennsport. We've talked about Rennsport a lot on this program, both as in this is a very interesting sim, we're interested in seeing where this is going, and in a, hey, developers, where's my beta code kind of way. What is your, just like, how much have you been paying attention to Rennsport, Justin?
I've been very curious about it, especially because of the demand with ESL and those respective series. Because, well, they're the main series and main people on there, right? So it's the biggest exposure for most people to it. And when you think about it, those drivers are the leading charges of change and development when you have a series like that with an esports organization like ESL connected to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's definitely a bold strategy just from like a marketing side and from like a developing side of let's have giant esport competitions on our platform before it's even out of beta and just kind of showcase it to the world and how that could have gone very badly for them, particularly if there was like glaring game issues and server issues and other things along those lines.
I always found it to be a bold call, again, but at the same time, from what I've seen, the structure seems sound, the car model seems sound, and that's the main thing. If it works, it's a good call. If it's filled with 2,000 bugs, and you do that same move, we're talking a completely different topic on this.
Yeah, and I can say pretty much across the board that it was a bold strategy, Cotton, but it actually has paid off.
Yes, it has.
Yes. So a couple months ago, they announced that the Porsche 963 and Goodhood Will Climb would be officially coming to their sim. Of course, Rennsport has been very open about the fact that they're going to open it up their platform to modders whenever it leaves beta, so we'll see what other things that we have. But they also recently teased a new official car that's going to be coming to Rennsport. And it is a thinly veiled attempt to not show off that it is the Porsche 992 Cup, but it's pretty obvious that it's the Porsche 992 Cup, based on the gooseneck spoiler that they showed off, and as well as the blue trim that you can see along the rear diffuser and the general just overall shape of the rear of the car. It's very clearly a Porsche, in my opinion.
Yeah, looking at it very closely when you check that, I agree. Once we talked things prior to this as well, it makes sense too because you mentioned the prior announcement with the racetrack, but also Porsche. You have that connection already built in. And one of the main arguments for many people in sim racing is you want to have the most current car, as in you want to be able to race what people currently are racing. And one of the major things is if you didn't have that car, or at least at this point, people will be wondering, why isn't it here yet? And I think it's, again, important to have that current content for drivers to be able to race on in turn, especially when their competitors like R-Factor and especially iRacing have had this car throughout the year.
Yeah. And just to continue on that point and kind of what we were talking about earlier, just in the rise of sim racing in general, we're seeing cars become available at a much quicker rate than previously. Because, for instance, we have all the GTP cars. but we don't have any of the DPI cars. We completely skipped a generation of the top class of IMSA and have gone to what's currently racing 9 months after they made their first racing debut. Not to mention that we have the newest Porsche and the newest Ferrari GT3s. We normally had to wait years before that kind of stuff came out. But now it's like, oh, this car has been out for 3 months. Let's get it in iRacing, or let's get it on R-Factor 2. And I'm loving the fact that that's the norm now, is that we can quickly get these cars now, and we don't have to wait years or months or years for them.
I think that's more so, too, because not just the fact that some of the manufacturers have that investment in esports, but because just some of the impacts, or rather opinions, have really changed. Because, for example, you think of the LMP2. Remember asking about that actually at 1.2 during a discussion on the broadcast side when it was still on the iRacing side. And it was the thought of, would people mind the older car instead? It was kind of an idea floated around from somebody. But that car eventually, of course, came to be, as you know, with the current LMP2 car prior to some of the other competitors. But here, the main argument on the reason for that, though, and this is very well now the case now, is lots of teams felt that was very manufacturer-centric information, very confidential, because the thought was, iRacing is so close on the sim side, what if people look at our car and find out what's in it? And now it's kind of changed to where, okay, people aren't going to find necessarily that, but we have an invested interest in it in terms of our company and with the teams we're partnered with to have the most recent cars. Because if we don't get those cars out there, we don't have that brand exposure.
Yeah.
So now that, I think, has really drawn that rush and more so requirement, I would argue strongly, to get cars and tracks in quicker in these respective sims, whether it's not just iRacing, but R-Factor, but RenSport, to be able to make sure you're there, because if you're not there, your competitors will make sure they are there and they are known to be the ones available and build that brand loyalty compared to, say, the others who have that counterpoint of, I can't drive my favorite car, so I'm going to drive this at our manufacturer instead.
Which, as a Mopar fan, is mostly what I end up doing anyway. sad little Mopar fan that the only motorsport that Dodge takes seriously is drag racing, and we're not going to talk about NHRA for all. Anyway, so yeah, there is no official word from RenSport when this car will be added, but given that it's RenSport and they're very active on their social media, particularly in their Discord as well, the information will be available whenever they release it. That's about it. Moving on. Sometimes you have the fortune of having, whenever, because of the unique way that we do this show, where the UK guys do 1 week and the US guys do the other week, sometimes news that you really want to talk about happens to happen when the other guys' side of the show is airing, if that makes any sense whatsoever. So, unfortunately, while Matt would like to talk about this, I get to talk about it. So, haha! A little intercontinental rib jabbing that we usually do on this show. Anyway, so, we have gotten some first look at the EA Sports WRC gameplay and some of the aspects that we should be expecting to see from this game. But before we get up into that, we also got the full car list for the game. And, oh boy, Codemasters, EA Codemasters, which I'm just going to refer to as Codemasters because that's what it is, has pretty much checked off all the boxes for rally fans out there. First of all, you have all the Rally 1 hybrids, the Ford, the Hyundai, the Toyota. You also have all of the Rally 2 cars, the Citroen C3, the Ford Fiesta, the Hyundai i20, the two Skodas, the Volvo Polo as well. You have the Rally 3 Ford Fiesta Junior WRC car. You have the Ford Fiesta and the Volkswagen Polo from 2017 to 2021. You have World Rally cars from 97 to 2011 with the C4, the etc. Focus RSs, the Mini Countryman, the Evo 9, almost a 10. That would have been wrong. oh, wait, no. Sorry, that's 7. I know Roman numerals, I swear. And that's still 6. I'll get it right eventually. The Peugeot 206, the Sat Cadorba, the Skoda Fulvia, and 3 different flavors of Subaru Impressas. In Rally 2 from that time, you also had the Ford Fiesta, the Peugeot 208, Rally 4 cars, the Ford Fiesta, the Opel Atom, the Peugeot 208, and the Renault Twingo. You have NR4/R4 cars, the Cray R4, the Mitsubishi Evo 10, you have the Subaru WRX XTI, you have S2000 cars. Not sure. My rally knowledge is lacking a little bit in knowing what kind of cars those are. I'll let the more rally focused sim racing fans can look that up, the information. We have F2 kit cars. We have Group A cars, the Ford Escort, the Lancia Delta, the Mitsubishi Galant, Subaru Impreza, and a Subaru Legacy. You have all of the Group B cars, both all-wheel drive and rear-wheel drive. And one Pro car, Lancia 037, the Opel Manta, the Porsche 911 SCRS, the Audi Quattro, the Ford RS200, the Lancia Delta, the MG Metro, the Peugeot 205. You have many, many historic cars. You have the M3 Evo from BMW. You have the Mark II Escort, driven by some guy named Colin McRae. Never heard of him. you have the Ford Sierra Cosworth. You have the Renault 5 Turbo. You have the Hellman Avenger, which is a fun addition, I should add. You have the Opel Kadett. You have Peugeot 309. You have a Golf GTI. You have the Lancia Fulvia. You have a Mini Cooper. You have the Volkswagen Nova. And, of course, you have the Builders cars that we talked about briefly during my last show, where you can basically build your own cars to match the specs of the current cars. So very, very solid list, in my opinion. What do you think, Justin?
I think it's an extremely in-depth list, first of all, because, first of all, that was a lot to take in terms of just reading off the cars car by car. But two, the tagline, when you look towards the website, I think encapsulates it, where this is history and the future of rally. Because for many people, let me ask you this, when was the last time a WRC game came out exclusively for the WRC circuit with how much in-depth it was? This game is planning to be.
So this title has a bit of a colored history. It was developed for a very long time by Kylanon, the group that's responsible for like Test Drive Unlimited series, if you're more familiar with them. They had a very solid platform, didn't have this quite this amount of cars, but WRC decided, I don't remember what year it was. I can't even remember if it was when it was before or after this show became the Simcast, and not the prior name. But they decided to that the title was going to go to Code, like the rights to make the WRC title was going to go to Codemasters this year before Codemasters was purchased by EA. So there have been similar games that have this this in-depth of a car count, but it hasn't been this full. I'd have to go look, but I don't believe any other WRC titles has had, 78 rally cars like this.
Yeah. Just looking at the last year's specs for reference to the 2022 release, because the reason I ask that again is it's important to be able to have that history. It's important to be able to have that current presence. I think it's important to be able to have that different layer of history, too, because of how much history you have covered. Especially when it comes to the Subarus. Everyone loves the dominant Subarus, don't they not? Mm-hmm. But in that regard, of course, too, you have to remember this is built, this now transition license for Codemasters to what the bones are of the Dirt Rally series. Yep. And I think having that with the Unreal Engine, which I think is the big part in this, instead of, say, the Frostbite engine for this to go forward through, like some of the others, since it's a Codemasters project, I think is going to be a major positive because of the visual aspect, but also because of some of the art details that came out, I think, throughout the week, where you have those extra details of in-depth focus around the tracks. It's a little less kilometer-wise. I did note before we get fully into the depth of things, but I think it's the amount of stages that's going to be where you can drive a lot of these cars. That's going to be so in depth to be able to have that detail in as a good first build in particular. In fact, to reach the expectations people have from the last developer and then raise the bar to expectations where you can build very much off of compared to, say, building the bare bones from a fresh start and going from there.
Yeah, most definitely. And knowing that Codemasters is going to take on this title and the fact that they have this rich, just hugely successful dirt rally platform to build this title off of, I knew it was going to, be this just pushing the boundaries of what other WRC titles has done in the past. Just looking at some of the specs, it will feature over 600 kilometers of unique roads and more than 200 stages. In theory, that should mean that all the stages are, I'm trying to remember, I believe the longest stage is around 38 kilometers, something along those lines. There was a content video, kind of a deep dive that they did, that EA Sports produced, similar to what they did with F1 23, going over, here's kind of the deep dive on what to expect of this title, just going into depth about how seasons are going to be changing as you go from rally to rally, depending on when the WRC visits, talking about the dynamic handling systems that's going to be existing in this title. They also spent a lot of time talking about the Rally 1 additions to the title, like having to, decide how the hybrid system is going to work throughout the stage and how you can be able to adjust that from stage to stage and other things along those lines. You talked about how it's on the Unreal Engine, which means this game's just going to look amazing. Unreal is what it says on the tin. Unreal, with how good it looks. And a lot of the footage that we saw in this deep dive, as well as screenshots, they just look next level.
And I think that's the major expectation that people have, and rightfully so, have when you're in 2023, you want mm-hmm. those visuals. You want to be able to have all this. This is almost to the point where it's very much required, where if you don't have it, people are wondering, is this 2003 again?
Mm-hmm.
Well, to be put it quite simply in terms of all the details, in terms of how it looks, this is all critical to have. It's important to get that feel right because, as mentioned, you have the dirt rally system to build off those physics. But having that to be able to then in turn build forward off of, and some of that coordination with their F123 division, for example, it was talked about with the handling systems. It's really to where I think, in my opinion at least, based on everything reading forward, this is going to be a very good game from launch to be able mm-hmm. to get the feelings down. In particular, there was a lot of discussion on trying to add some assist because for a lot of the Dirt Rally games, it was more of the hardcore.
Yeah.
You're thinking of when you have this now factored on the EA side, you also want to draw in future fans because one of the main arguments I say about, say, the NASCAR video games is why so many people like the games from 20 years ago is they were really good, and in turn, they made a lasting impact to be remembered throughout the generations. I think WRC wants it to make a lasting impact for the young generations to where they will love these games as they grow up and make that impression for they want to come back to this type of game time and time again. So I think they're making that ladder really solid from what I can tell. And from what I can tell as well, the visuals, as mentioned, are absolutely unreal. I'm still wondering what the talking point on one of these screenshot points is. Apparently people thinking they're some of the gigantic acorn/pumpkins that they tried to show off on some of their screenshots.
Oh.
I think you're confused about what I've seen, too.
Yeah, they look familiar. I can't place the name. But I think I've seen fruit that look like that before. But maybe not quite that big.
Well, but for those who don't see the screenshot that we're talking about,
because this is a podcast and this is great radio.
Yes, it's orange. It's got prickles like a pine cone. And it's shaped very thickly that are sitting inside a dump truck made out of metal and wood with scrapes to show its old-timely style in the midst of a dirt parking lot set up outside of a garage, with the garage with the wood doors outside one of the scene points. To put it simply, though, it's about the authenticity. You're talking about a series that goes across the globe. You need to get that feel and flavor of each country and each environment down to the T. If it looks like you're sharing assets from 10 different countries, you don't have that same feel compared to having what, from what can tell, is being aimed for to be able to have each scene and each country and each time of year, mind you, with the scenery mm-hmm. and the seasons feel unique.
Yeah. I'm going to have to go look up what kind of fruit that is. It kind of looks like larger dragon fruit, but that wouldn't make sense because dragon fruit's a different color. But anyway, slight tangent for a second, Justin, if you will humor me for a second. So EA Sports now has this title, which is, you know, focusing a lot on improving graphics and having historical models. If we just turn our focus just a little bit to the left and look at the other EA Sports title, F123, do we think that we can start seeing this type of focus, having the historic things, having these upgraded graphics? Do you think we can start seeing that happen in those titles, or do you think F1's just kind of its own thing?
I almost feel like it's kind of its own thing, right now at least, because mm-hmm. prior to the most recent F1 release, I should say, prior to the acquisition by EA, they did have a lot of those historic cars. But notice with the most recent change, there's a lot of the push, of course, with the new life modes and whatnot and some of the supercars. And I found it interesting when they acquired Codemasters, and it was the question of would they what are they going to do with the racing IP? Let's put it simply, because if you don't know, the last time EA had the license, they eventually let that go in the late 2000s with NASCAR because it wasn't profitable. And that was a confirmed fact with their last title being an arcade game. And that was in the midst of them planning still for NASCAR 10 prior to the license being released and relinquished for a few years before no one picked it up until the late, till the couple years later. Mm-hmm. But that being said, my main thought when I seen all that was, how was this going to work out because of the last time they did racing games in with actual licensed sports leagues? I think having being in the F1 market, though, kind of has changed that tone, at least from the outside looking in, of this is a growing sport, especially in the U.S. market, a North American sport. It's one of the most watched sport series in the world, mm-hmm. in F1. Why not get into it? And I think, in turn, that's having this brand power of EA Sports is helping with the WRC side, especially to get that licensing with a already owned light IP but didn't have a name attached to it to add that interest there. But that being said, with the F1 games, I still think it's its own thing. I mm-hmm. think it's still going to touch on the history of having that as an option. After all, they still have the driver icons. But the main thought to me is, that's not the only thing that needs to be worked on, because for F1 23, in my opinion, it felt almost like a gap year, or almost a small upgrade year waiting before you make the first big changes the next year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm inclined to agree with you. We have not been short on this program about our opinion of yearly releases and how that is much more beneficial to the pocketbooks of the investors of these studios than it is to the players. And especially with your comment that F1's its own thing, I'm inclined to agree, because you know F1's so protective of their license, and they obviously have this image that they want to portray of the F1 lifestyle, if you will. And I'm not sure that looking to the past is kind of in that ecosystem for them, if that makes sense. So they will tend to focus some more on the it and now, and they can, you know, invoke the name of Senna and Schumacher and all of these F1 greats and have them be like fantasy drivers that you can have on your teams, but they'll still continue to like showcase the current package.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Rather than look at, you know, the widely popular V10 era, which is what most sim racers want them to do, because those cars are ridiculous.
I understand why they'd want that, because, well, switching to a different kind of sport, if you follow along with the NBA 2K series, the past 2 years, in response to the modding communities being so popular with creating old rosters and old mm-hmm. league sets to be able to mod the PC version, 2K said, you know what? We're going to add the eras of past to that game. Even this year, you can start the game back in the 1980s in the Magic Johnson, Larry Bird era, the Michael Jordan era, the Kobe Bryant era, the mm-hmm. LeBron James era, or the current era. Not just the one current set point, and then you mod later. They built it into the game hard code to go back in time with the graphics, with the announcers, with the teams, automatically have the jerseys update instead of having to change the mods out every few months or every new season and go from there. Now, I can see the response in turn why people are then in the racing game saying, why can't I have that too? I'm one of those two that feels that same way on the NASCAR side, don't get me wrong. But there's also that leaning point you just mentioned. People want to market the current era. Mm-hmm. You don't want people to look at the current drivers and say, I prefer 1998. I'm going to live in 1998. You want to build the marketability and build on your current game plan. And that seems to be the case for F1, where they've been marketing the current day, especially with the drive of what the marketing's gone, especially you throw in Drive to Survive. You throw in the current games and how the momentum's built. The current career path is why it's built a lot of the popularity the game has, because before the career mode was on the, okay, what do we do? It's the same pattern. Mm-hmm. Past 4 years really propelled that career mode. But it's going to be difficult to be a hard sell of, okay, how do we get, do we go to the niche market of being able to start in the 1990s for a series?
Yeah, and ultimately, like, adding them to the game doesn't mean that they, just even having the cars to drive around instead of the supercars, just having the ability to drive, like, the V10 era or the V12 era, and giving players that opportunity to do that rather than the somewhat numb experience from driving supercars around. I think that would be even a welcome change. But, you know, ultimately, you're right. And kind of attached to what we're talking about, F123 recently announced that they're doing another Hot Lap Challenge, this time with Alex Albon at Singapore. So if you go log on to F123, find the Pro Challenge, if you can beat Albon's 1:31.711 benchmark at Singapore, you'll be able to race with the Williams golf livery that they showed off this weekend. Because, you know, who doesn't like a golf livery?
Who doesn't love history in that regard? To touch upon that last tangent.
Yep.
But it is a nice looking
paint
scheme.
It all comes back around.
Yes, it's one of the most historic paint schemes ever. Did you know that paint scheme originally started from an airplane? No, seriously.
No, I did not. Honestly. The first time I became aware of it was because the GT40s. But what airplane are we talking about here?
I did the research on it because I had to look back at it because I was curious on its origins. It was talked about in the 1930s because Gulf Oil also had the airline side of things. Mm-hmm. And I'm just trying to get the exact details once again back in front of me here. But in that, to answer your question on that discussion point, prior to it being on a car, it was back in the 1930s and 40s on some of those airlines back in the time for shipping paths. And in turn, it transitioned eventually to the race cars that people know it more so. So I'd have to get the exact details again on the airplane specs, but it's been around for almost 100 years, that paint scheme in of itself, in some form, and with that orange and blue.
Yeah. Yeah, and I can't think of a single bad golf scheme. It just works.
Yes.
Anyway.
Remember, I was to touch upon that once again one more time. I just got the double check on that one. Originally, it was part of the oil company I talked about, but it was indeed on those airplanes that went in the 1940s, to be more precise on that history. 1930s and 40s. Major Alfred J. Williams, the Gulf's aviation manager, had two biplanes painted to that respective paint scheme back around that time. That per RK Motors Charlotte that helps keep that statistic down from the history paths.
All right. Well, I learned something today. It's always a good day whenever you learn something new like that.
Long live the Gulf Hawk 2, wouldn't you say? Yep.
Oh, yeah, you can definitely see the genesis of that paint scheme on that fighter. It's very cool. Yeah. Anyway, what were we talking about? EA Sports, that's what it was.
Yes.
So if you want to go see if you can beat Alex Albon, go ahead and log on and check that out. And stay tuned for more information about EA Sports WRC. We are attempting to reach out to them to see if we can get some free access, like some early access to be able to test the title out, talk about on the show. So hopefully something can come from that. Anyway, so we talk about iRacing a lot on this show. Mainly because iRacing is kind of my sim of choice, and I usually write the run of shows. So, of course, we need to talk about iRacing and the SRX announcement that was made this week. Justin, why don't you kind of lay this out?
Well, for those who missed the announcement from iRacing coming September the 19th, iRacing confirming that SRX is to come to the platform by 2024. iRacing already is in the midst of planning on its trip to scan the SRX car and gather data as part of its expected release. Now, for those who don't know what SRX is, that is the Superstar Racing Experience, which has been held now for 2 years on short tracks across the United States, started by respective competitors and motorsports enthusiasts like Tony Stewart. Ray Etherham has had a role in it over the years, and currently in CEO is Don Hawk.
Never heard of him.
Well, in that regard, either way, in terms of the racing, it's put on some interesting racing, especially with the return of Thursday Night Thunder by ESPN just this past year for the most recent season. Drivers like Marco Andretti, Ryan Newman, and several IndyCar and NASCAR Cup Series drivers have made appearances in that series. Haley Deegan also has made appearances, for example, one of the Craftsman Truck Series competitors. And Paul Tracy became the first driver suspended from the series this past year.
But, because it's Paul Tracy.
Okay, keep that as simple as that.
Yeah.
But to put this simply, it's big to have the car on there because a lot of the tracks the series goes to are on iRacing, and iRacing just so happened to purchase Monster Games, who made the last SRX game prior to the acquisition. And in turn, this is a natural progression, in my opinion, Ben, to be able to bring this in because of the fan enthusiasm, but also the backing behind it, the amount of star power behind the series, the talks of international races potentially coming into play, there's been rumors of. But also, this is big for the community on the short track side because this means potentially more short tracks to get the car to race on, because about half of this year's schedule is not on the service yet. Although, one track in Slaner was already in the pipe. So I think people are saying, hooray, we get this car and more short tracks.
Yeah, I've been saying for months, probably, I'm pretty sure I said this when it was announced iRacing bought Monster Games, was that the SRX car was going to come to iRacing, just because it makes sense. We see that iRacing has had, and Monster Games as well, has had huge success with the World of Outlaws console title, and the popularity that they've had on there. And like the decision to keep that as a console title, because you know if you wanted to race those cars on PC, there's iRacing right there for you. So I'm wondering if there's going to be an SRX, another SRX console game that comes out that's running on the same engine as the Dirt Outlaws title, like the the Outlaws title. You know what I'm talking about.
The World of Outlaws console titles.
Yes.
And remember, a lot of the tracks, as they make to the sim, where do they go next? To the console game. But it makes the most sense, and that's also in part when you think about it, why iRacing ventured to the console side. They need to people want them on consoles, have wanted those on consoles, the iRacing sim itself, but obviously that's very difficult, and we're talking about a game code built originally from the 2000s, that has been built on for more than 15 plus years. It's not easy to export from PC to console in a lot of those cases.
Yeah, but there have been huge titles, Project Cars, Assetto Corsa. Assetto Corsa has been a little bit more successful with ACC, but whenever they ported to consoles, it just fundamentally changed the way the game worked. And not in the good way.
Exactly. But I think Tony Gardner mentioned it himself, because they already have some of the past tracks on the schedule ready for SRX. You can make an official series from the jump where all you need is the car. Then you get the tracks as you get them scanned across the country.
Yeah.
It's just going to be the matter of keeping up with that, plus the NASCAR scans, plus whatever series come into mind. There's a lot of demand for tracks right now.
Mm-hmm. And because it's a car in iRacing, you can take the SRX car to a number of different places. You can do a Daytona race. You can do a Sebring race. You can take them to Spa and run them around Spa. Like, if there's a way to race these cars on iRacing, someone will figure out how to do it.
I think you're saying is everyone's dream of making their own iRock series again. That's basically the modern-day iRock, is SRX.
It is the modern-day iRock series, so it just makes sense. Also, it's an extremely interesting package, just in general, because, you know, they race on dirt tracks and on asphalt ovals as well. So this is the first car, to my knowledge, on iRacing that it's going to be able to do both. It has, you know, 700-odd horsepower, which means it's going to be, you know, 100 horsepower more than the current Cup car. You have this really unique aerodynamic package that comes with the SRX that sets it apart from, you know, the Cup car. Has a lot less downforce than the Cup car. It has, but in the same way, it has more downforce than, like, the super late model. So it's going to be a really interesting car to drive.
I'm very curious, though, now that you mentioned the bigger tracks out of it. Those aren't tracks that the real world car has gone to yet for SRX. How did they drive on those? I think we're about to see a lot of experimentation, because I'm going to mention the most realistic comparison. Have you ever raced an MX-5 at Martinsville?
I haven't done that yet. It's on my list.
Well, remember, that was something with Moon Car and from Travis Brown and Moonhead's channel that eventually, of course, led to that MX-5 test.
I was going to say, cuts to, what was it, 3 weeks ago with Dale Jr. driving an MX-5 around Martinsville?
And Bobby Labonte and several others.
Yeah.
Exactly. It allows combinations they haven't thought of yet to say, if this worked in a big market with some of our real world drivers in the virtual world, what's going to happen if we throw it on the real world track? Let's do a test.
Yeah. That being said, as someone who's done a lot of events on Forza, which, you know, Forza's Forza, you can put the V12 in a BMW I Setta because reasons. Just because you can doesn't mean you should. So
that's the word test.
Yes. So I foresee playing with third member gears. I foresee messing with, like, engine power changes to make sure like the car doesn't like completely run out of gear when it's going around Daytona, for instance. But yeah, very interesting. Unfortunately, we're going to have to wait until 2024 to get our hands on this car. But, you know, does 2024 mean, you know, January 2024? Does it mean March 2024? Or does it mean Season 1 2024, which is only a couple months away?
That's all an iRacing thing, remember, based on the development time. So it's the matter of what we see, hence the name. Hence the wording 2024.
Yes, so I'm looking forward to this very much so. Of course, whenever this becomes available, we'll be talking about it on this show and potentially making silly decisions of where to race these things. I can't imagine that it won't be too long until someone takes it to the is it the Irwindale Figure of Eight course?
Yes, it is. And
yep,
they added a second. I believe they're adding the second one coming now with the most recent content, of course, with the other California-based track. I'm blanking on the name.
Kern
County Speedway. Yes.
Yep. So yeah, I can't wait to see the poor decisions that are made with this car, but in a good way. Anyway, little bits of information about two titles that we've been paying attention to a lot. First of all, Forza Motorsport. If you have pre-ordered that title, you can now preload it, install it in advance on your Xbox or PC. If you've selected do pre-orders, remember you can still pre-order the game up to a day in advance, and if you get the Premium Edition, which is, I believe, what they're calling it now, you can get the game 5 days in advance. Hope I will, of course, be sharing my thoughts on the new Forza game whenever that comes out, since I have the vested interest in it. I'd go into a lot more about that, but we only have 5 minutes left in the show, and we got some esports roundup of the week to mention here in a couple minutes. So the other tiny little piece of news is that Ian Bell and Street 4 Studios has confirmed that Sebring and Lime Rock Park will be two of the tracks that will officially be in GTR Revival. And because he was doing this on Twitter, that's all the information that we have. So love both those tracks. Good to see that they're getting a lot of representation, particularly since I'm going to be missing Sebring desperately from Forza Motorsports, and you know, a track that's been in Forza since the beginning. And I'm gonna stop there before else I go on a rant. And I don't want to do that to Justin and scare him away.
You won't scare me away, don't worry.
All right, but instead we're gonna Tristan Gears, and it's time for this week's Esports Roundup of the Week, brought to you by The Gaming Athlete. Head on over to thegamingathlete.com to learn more about how to reach athlete status in gaming by maximizing your performance and restoring your well-being. Once again, that's thegamingathlete.com. And I almost didn't pause. Well, I had to remind myself to not pause because Louis wasn't here to add his little jingle in there. But I digress. Justin, do you want to talk about eNASCAR and the World of Outlaws series on iRacing?
Yes, indeed. Just this past week, the eNASCAR College iRacing series, powered by Nace Star League, kicked off its fall semester. And with school in session, the drivers definitely had a hard time battling on the final moments of that night. Starting off the campaign at Daytona International Speedway, 40 of the top collegiate iRacers do battle around the racetrack, but it came down to a big one in the last lap in eNASCAR overtime. Daniel Falkingham from the University of Maine at Machias made his way to the top of the podium by 15/100 of a second for St. Charles Community College student Anthony Burrows and former eNASCAR Coke Series driver. They were the only two that escaped a chaotic finish, which seen 20-plus drivers crash in Turn 1. Several of the drivers who made their way through the field included former champion Logan Clampett from the 2023 spring semester and Garrett Fatone of Arizona State amongst the top four. All those drivers battling for scholarship funds in the opening portions of the season. The big one, though, took up many of the top contenders in the night. Those include drivers like Liam Sheen and several more who led the way into the final moments before the rest of the field crashed on the last lap. Others involved in the incident included drivers like Nate Stewart, Colton Salick, and Reese Bayham, and more, who have showcased their speed throughout the history of the series so far. The next time the eNASCAR College iRacing Series hits the track for its session is October, Charlotte Motor Speedway. Time trials begin September the 27th through October the 10th. You must be a full-time college student to be able to be eligible. Meanwhile, at the iRacing World of Outlaws Butt Kicker Late Model Series, its championship came to a close. Evan C. picked up the championship with a single point difference over Logan Rumsey. Things changing over the season tide-wise after he and Blake Majewis, C. Majewis should say, dominated the season. With Logan Rumsey's late race and season charge, though, he made things interesting for the dirt track at Charlotte on September the 18th. In turn, Logan Rumsey started all the way back at 17th in the final feature of the season, while Evan C. started off with the track position. In turn, with the battle coming down to the positions late in the race, Evan C. needed to finish 18th or better to pick up the championship. After starting off in 5th, he picked up incidents on the early stages of the race. Lap 15, C. came together with Chase Barbara, slamming the wall and causing severe contact and damage. He was scored in 19th position before the halfway point. In the end, Blake Majewis picked up the final feature win, but C, with his speed in the qualifiers and heats earlier for points, got just enough of an advantage despite Rumsey's second place finish in the finale to win the title. Dylan Wilson, Mike Augustine, and Ethan Dunder rounded out the top five in the final feature. In turn, drivers get set for the next championship coming up. The World of Outlaws Thrustmaster Sprint Car Series, its qualifying series starts September the 25th, all the way through towards its opener in November, all the way to January for the Pro Series. More information, go to iRacing.com. With that, Ben, back to you.
Thank you, Justin. Just a quick note, because we talk about the eNASCAR Coca-Cola iRacing Series a lot, just a reminder that the series, this season's finale at Homestead Miami Speedway, is coming up this coming Tuesday on September 26th at 8 p.m., where we'll see Garrett Lowe, Tucker Minter, Nick Ottinger, and Steven Wilson battling it out for the championship. Be sure to tune in for that. And that about does it for this week on the Simcast. Justin, again, thank you for jumping in literally the last minute and helping out this evening. Do you have any final thoughts, any wisdom you want to share with us this evening? The floor is yours.
The one thing I'll note in regards to the Coke Series Championship fight, the pressure is going to be absolutely on in front of fans at the NASCAR Hall of Fame. It's going to be critical to be able to tune out the pressure. That being said, if you want my opinion to say, the championship could go either direction. Ottinger amongst the group and technical alliance had a lot of expectations coming in. I like the chance of Ottinger. How do you like the chances of a championship contender in the NASCAR finale?
I'm going to be honest. Most of the top four that I picked at the beginning of the playoffs are no longer in it. So I had chosen Zielinski, Kerwin, Guest, and Conti. So I don't know what to think anymore, honestly.
I would have picked Conti too.
I like Ottinger, honestly. Of those three, four, I think Ottinger is the one that's going to take it away.
Especially since he and Conti work together a lot behind the scenes. I think that's going to be the big difference, because they put in a lot of the experience on the sim coming into this year with the next gen in the past couple of years. But you never know with the championship, especially when it comes to championship night with the fans all in attendance with you in person.
Yeah. And of the top four, if I'm remembering correctly, Nick is the only former champion.
Correct. Believe so. Okay. In that regard.
Yes. So it would definitely be a good race, so be sure to tune in for that. Thank you again, Justin. For all of us here at the Simcast, remember you can tune in again next week, where Matt and Steven will be back with their particular brand of sim racing news. I have been Ben. Justin has been Justin. Thank you all for listening. Stay tuned for On the Crid. And for now, have a good week. Stay safe out there. And remember to hashtag eat more tacos. Bye for now.
This program is a Radio Show Limited production. For more, subscribe to the Simcast wherever you get your podcasts.